We're back. It's the next level. Lashon Hara. What not to say. So, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16 tells us, you shall not go about as a talebearer. And very interesting, the Hebrew. Lo selech rachel be'amecha. It says lo means not. Selech means to walk as a rachel, as a talebearer amongst your people. Now, why does it use the language about walking as you gossip? So, Rav Hirsch, great German Jewish philosopher, interpreted the biblical phrase. What does that mean to walk as a talebearer? It's like you're traveling around. You're what?
Spreading.
What is it?
Spreading.
You're spreading. You're moving it around. You're like a peddler of information. You're not peddling merchandise. You're peddling information. And don't go about as a talebearer. You should not stand by the blood of your neighbor. I am God. Now from that verse, we learn about the prohibition of what's called in Hebrew, what's called rechilut. Look at number one. There's three parts. And I just want to go through the technical, and then we're going to get the philosophical. There are three parts or types of lashon. Lashon hara is actually one of the three parts, but sort of the vernacular for this whole thing rabbinically is called lashon hara. But the biblical term, since you're in the next level, fellows and the like, you need to know the biblical term. What is the biblical term for speaking inappropriately about other people? It's called rechilut. Rechilut, though, refers not necessarily to false or bad information. I'll say it again. Rechilut refers not necessarily to false or bad information, just information.
Gossip.
Thank you. So what's an example of gossip? It's not necessarily false, and it's not necessarily bad.
If you were telling everybody that Atara was engaged.
Oh, that's interesting. So I don't know. Was
that,
no,
she
no,
got
no.
Before she knew that, well, no, what if I was engaged and she was going to get...
So is breaking a... that would be breaking a confidence. Is breaking a confidence rechilos? I don't know. It might be a separate prohibition. It might fall under rechilos, actually. It's a very interesting idea. I don't know.
Saying how crazy Rabbi Pinney gets once on God, he becomes...
How crazy Rabbi Pinney gets?
Oh. Did I just lash on her?
No, I don't know. Why is that? I don't think that's
rechilos. I was like, what if he threw his jacket? That's
information. It's stuff that's not readily available information. It's stuff that everybody knows Pinney goes crazy. We showed a video of Pinney going crazy at a wedding. So that's not really rechilos. It has to be a sort of a confidence. Here's a good example. Did you hear so-and-so redid her kitchen? Spent $100,000 in the kitchen? Now, the person might have spent $100,000 on the kitchen. Might be true. Is there anything wrong with spending $100,000 on the kitchen?
I wish I could.
Right? Nothing wrong with it. Right? So, but what is the problem with it?
It's private.
She told me, they told you that in confidence.
It's private.
Yeah.
It's private. And that's what it is. It's revealing private information. It's gossip. It's being a yenta. It's like the Yiddish term, to be a yenta. You know, you ever hear that? It's like, stop talking about other people's stuff. And we'll come back to that, what the issue is. Now, that's different than lashon hara. That's called rechilut. Walking around, just sharing stuff. The second category, lashon hara, the words tell it. Every Hebrew word has got, what's lashon mean, guys? Language. Hara, ra is, resh ayin is, bad. Bad stuff. What does that mean, bad stuff? Information that's bad about other people. Could it be true?
Maybe.
It can be true. And here is where the halacha, the Jewish tradition, and secular law, if you've studied any libel and slander, I've studied a little of this. This is where there's a little of a distinction between secular law and Jewish religious law. Because in secular law, what do you have to do to defend yourself against a libel suit or slander? Slander, libel is just a written form of slander. It's the same thing, really. It's just when you put it in writing. You have to prove it's true. You have to prove that you have a credible source for what you shared. Because as long as you can demonstrate that you believed it was true, that's it. In halacha, doesn't matter. Why is halacha different than secular law? In general. And you really,
it can't be changed.
What's that?
It can't be changed.
Well, number one, it can't be changed, so secular law can't be changed too. Okay. But the secular law is not concerned with what? What is the point of law? Not religious law, but the legal system in this great country and any other Western
democracy.
It's to keep an orderly society. It's not to save face. It's not to protect people's emotional feelings, their spiritual connection to God. It's just to keep things civil. And therefore, if you have people spreading lies about other people, destroying their reputations and killing their businesses and the like, then that's a damage. That's a real damage. And you can collect on that. And you can sue in a court of law. So all you have to really do is show, what do you mean? I had a reason to believe that that was true. And halacha does not matter if it's true. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. Even if it is true, okay, it damages the person anyway. And the question is, why are you sharing it? Now, we're going to get to the exceptions in a minute, because there are exceptions to every rule. Sometimes it might be important to actually share something negative, which is true. When does the halacha make an exception for when it's actually permissible to share something which is true? You're never permitted to share anything which is a lie. That's the last category I'll get to in a minute. But when is it okay to share something which is true, but which is negative? Because generally speaking, it is not. Jonathan?
Would you a shidduch?
A shidduch. Now, that's very broad. A shidduch means a match. You want to set two people up. That's really broad. We got to get it more specific, because you just gave license, not you, but we all feel, especially if we've been hurt in some way, we feel we have the license then to badmouth that person. It's the only way I can get back at how disgusting he treated me or she treated me. I'll just say nasty things about them, right? And we do that, and we allow ourselves often to do that. When you have first-hand information that is important to another person, obviously those are gray areas also. But first-hand, it means it's not hearsay. It's not something you heard from someone else. It's something you know through your own experience. And it is something which is really, really pertinent and relevant. You know?
Maybe that's someone calling into the phone.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to turn my phone off here. I'm just turning it off. Hold on.
So it could...
Yeah, go ahead. Please ask.
So it could be, oh, I used to date that person and I have an opinion about their character.
Yeah.
Not necessarily...
It's an opinion.
...trying to get back about them.
No.
Based on things that they did, though, is my point, right?
First-hand experience and information.
So if I went out with somebody who, I don't know, like, stood me up 10 times, like, I can't tell somebody, not that I would ever go out with somebody.
You might be able to share that. You might be able to share that if you think it's really pertinent and relevant to that person.
They're thinking of dating this person, is my point. Right? They're like, oh, what do you think of someone?
So here's what I'm going to tell you to do. This is going to sound weird, and I don't get a lot of Lashon Hara questions. People will drop their meat spoon into a dairy pot or vice versa and call the rabbi. How often do you call the rabbi when you have a potential Lashon Hara situation? And I'm not an expert on Lashon Hara. Anybody here learning the laws of Lashon Hara? I'm trying to turn my phone off. It's not working. Anybody know? Anybody study? Chafetz Chaim. It's a whole book written on this. When is it okay? And I don't have a simple answer to that question. It might be okay if you have a friend that you get so upset when some people come late. Just know he's a great guy, but he came late on every single date. Or he stood me up even once or twice. I don't know. I think it really is reserved for more serious things. And that's where it gets gray. Character. God forbid if there's some kind of abuse. Serious issues that the person needs to know about. And I've unfortunately been involved in situations in my rabbinate where people keep quiet about things they should speak up about, and they talk about things that they should keep quiet about. And you're not doing anyone a favor by keeping your mouth shut when you know somebody is about to enter, and this is the second exception, a business deal with someone who's cheated you. If you've been cheated in business, and it's in a kind of an objective type of situation, not hearsay, first-hand experience, you have an obligation to share that with someone else that's about to go. So I was in a shul about a year ago in the five towns. I don't know why. Some guy walks over to me and says, I saw you just talking to so-and-so. I just want you to know it sounded like he was talking about something financial with you, which he actually was. And I'm just letting you know that I had personally a very unfortunate situation with him. He's not an honest man. And this has happened to a number of people in the neighborhood, and I want to make sure you don't get hurt. And he was doing the right thing, because he had that experience. And failing not to say something to me is being in violation of a separate prohibition in the Torah, which is called L'fnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. Before a blind man, I shall not place a stumbling block. I was blind in that situation. He could set me up for some deal and swindle me. And it's a metaphoric thing. It's not literally only physically taking a stumbling block and putting it before someone who's blind. You're blind metaphorically in a situation and someone else has been that. You have to say something. You're supposed to say something. But you're not supposed to say something if it's hearsay, it's subjective, and that's why this is a very gray area, clearly. Yes? Then what you can say to another person is, I've heard some rumblings in the community about this. Look into it. I don't know because it didn't happen to me, so I don't know if it's true because it could be rumors. I've also been, I've heard rumors about people that I found out afterwards were not true. And three or four people, usually they say where there's smoke, there's fire, and if enough people say you're drunk, walk it off, all that stuff. But there are times when rumors get spread and they're not true either. So what you could do in a situation is say, I don't know if this is true, but three or four people have said to me that.
That seems not okay, though.
It seems not okay, but I feel that if you don't make the person aware, then you're at least letting the person investigate.
Can you say, but I feel as though if you tell them what it is, then it's as though you were saying it.
So maybe don't. Maybe then...
Maybe
speak to so-and-so.
I tell them what they
Yeah, okay, let me refine that. That's probably better. That's probably better, which is to share that there might be a red flag here, but I don't know. Check it out.
Is it an obligation?
I think so.
It's
an obligation if you feel that the person is going to be subject to some kind of abusive swindle kind of business situation or abusive situation.
Because it gets back to you, so they confront the person, how'd you hear that? Oh, is that Joel said this?
Yeah, I know.
The thing with the summary...
Yeah, I know. I mean, but you're supposed to not allow your fellow human being to be swindled. You have a responsibility to other people. Again, I would be very cautious. I would caution you if it didn't happen to you. If it didn't happen to you, it might be better to keep it to yourself.
And then, there's that expression, judge everybody
favorably. You're supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt, always. But that doesn't mean if something happened to you, you shouldn't say that to someone else that it's about to happen.
That necessarily means it's going to happen to
them. It doesn't mean that. But you don't know that. We're not prophets. So there's no way of ever being able to know that. But there is a responsibility and there is an exception. These are the two classic exceptions to the rule of Lashon Hara, which is Shidduch, as Jonathan said, and business. But I would ask a third party. You always be careful before saying something negative about someone else. Ask a third party. The third example is Motzi Shemra. Motzi, you have to say that blessing when you eat bread. A Motzi Lechem. Motzi means to bring forth. Shame is a name. Ra is bad. Bringing forth a bad name. Purposely and intentionally damaging another person's reputation by making something up which is not true. That is the worst thing. So let's go through the three categories. One, just confidences. Private information. It's not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily false. Kitchen example, right? That's called rechilos. Biblical prohibition. Lashon Hara, negative information about another person. It's negative, doesn't matter if it's true. You're still not supposed to share it unless it falls under one of the two exceptions. And finally, Motzi Shemra, purposely lying about another individual, and the Talmud speaks about this as being able to recover damages for this, because I will tell you, it can take a lifetime to build a good reputation and 2 minutes to destroy it. And I want to mention one other thing, and then I'm going to get into the story. It doesn't matter that they're a famous rock star, that they're a celebrity, and they're like they have a lot of money. That doesn't all of a sudden make them fair game to badmouth. It doesn't. And our society says that if you put yourself out there as a famous person or a politician, we can schmutz you up and smear the world with all of your mistakes and sins and transgressions. That's okay to do because we need to know. We need to know everything about this candidate to make sure. It's bogus. It's bupkis. Nobody is perfect. And there's no such thing as people who are always perfect running for office. They were never perfect. Not 50, 60 years ago, not 100 years ago. It's just before the internet and before everything was on everybody's boob tube. And it's a terrible thing. It's keeping good people from going into politics. You know, my brother was mayor for many years, and now he wants to run again. I said, you're crazy. You need like an iron stomach to be able to do this, because you need to be able to just handle stuff being made up about you, or stuff that might be true that is really no one else's business and has nothing to do with your ability to effectively lead. And it's infected the political campaign world, and there's no basis for that in Judaism. And I know this from when I was a kid. You know, some of you know my dad was John Lennon's lawyer, and my father used to speak with Yoko just about stuff, things that were being said. And. And just like people just don't, you just like you enter this realm and you're that famous that you're no longer, you have no more rights anymore. People can just say and do whatever you want because you're famous. You should be able to you know, there's no such exception as far as Torah is concerned. The question is, why do we go so crazy about this? And by the way, this is really hard. This is one of the hardest, I would argue, mitzvot in the Torah to keep. I think it's easier to do Shabbos. And it's not easy to keep Shabbos. And I think it's easy to keep kosher than to keep quiet when you got a really juicy piece of information that may or may not be true, or some revealing some confidence. So turn to page 794 in your Chumashim from a fascinating story about Lashon Hara in the Torah. Of all the people who gets zapped for speaking Lashon Hara in the Torah, who is it? A great woman, leader, prophetess, none other than Moses' sister Miriam. She didn't even call her Moses' sister because she was considered a great Nevi'ah in her own right. And she, I just want you to understand who this woman was. Who was this woman? The Jewish people would never have been redeemed from Egypt if it wasn't for Miriam. You know why? Because Moshe would never have been born if it wasn't for Miriam. Because she, after she was born, she saw that her parents separated. It's like during the Holocaust. Who wants to bring more Jewish kids into the world if they're going to be thrown into the camps? Or Pharaoh, they were doing house-to-house searches for Jewish boys. And her parents separated. And you know what she told her father? As a little girl, she said, you're worse than Pharaoh. Because Pharaoh only decreed against the boys. You, by not continuing to have children, a little girl says to her parents, are decreeing against the boys and the girls. And she inspires her parents to reunite, and they have a son named Moshe. That's in the Midrash. This is the same woman after the splitting of the Red Sea that takes with her, where does she get a tambourine and a drum from? And she starts leading all the women in dance and in song. After the men sang, she was the one. And the rabbis asked, where did she get the tambourine? In the middle of the wilderness. And it says that she prepared instruments because she knew that there would be miracles. She has a woman of extraordinary faith. A little background about this person. Vatitaber Miriam, look in the middle of the page, chapter 12. And Miriam and Aaron spoke, B'moshe aladot aisha kushit, ashelu kach kisha kushit lakach. It says that Miriam and Aaron was the brother, so these are the three siblings, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Aaron became the high priest, Miriam was this great prophetess, and of course Moshe. So Miriam and Aaron says they speak against Moshe regarding this Cushite woman that he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu married a woman of Ethiopian descent. And it seems as though, the English translation is, it says, Vatidaber. It doesn't say that they spoke badly, but the word daber, as opposed to amar, two different synonyms for speaking in the Bible, usually refers to harsh kind of speaking. And that's why the English says, spoke against. It doesn't really mean that, it just means speak. But there's a tradition that the word daber, as opposed to amar, like Vayomer as opposed to Vatidaber, is a little more of a harsh. And they were speaking about this woman, a black woman, a Isha Kushit that he took, Vayomru. And look at the words. I'm going to read the whole story, then we're going to come back and analyze it and throw out some questions. And they said, Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem? Was it only with Moshe that God spoke? Halo gam vanu diber? Didn't God also speak to all of us? When did this story take place? After the giving of the Torah at Sinai. And why is Miriam saying, He was speaking like a little harshly. And it says, is it Moshe? Did God only speak with Moses? God spoke to all of us. We were all at Sinai. Vayishma Hashem. And then the Torah says, and God heard. God hears everything. What do you mean God heard? Vayish Moshe Anav. Then the next verse is like a total non sequitur. The next verse, Vayish Moshe Anav Me'od. And the man Moses was very humble. Mikol Adam Asher Pin Adama. Of any other human being that was on the face of the earth, Moses was the humblest of all people. Okay, that's nice, but what does that have to do with the story? I'm just going to keep throwing out these questions. We're going to come back and analyze it. Vayomer Hashem, of course, this whole idea that I'm sharing with you comes from Rabbi Soloveitchik. It's a brilliant idea. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, pitom, suddenly. Why suddenly? Why God? Why does the Torah have to tell us that God appeared to them suddenly? El Moshe ve'el Aaron, to Moses and to Aaron ve'el Miriam and to Miriam. Tze'ushloshtchem el ol moed. He said, the three of you, please come to the tent of meeting. The ol moed was the tent where Moses would receive prophecy, where much of the Torah was actually revealed to Moses during the 40 years in the wilderness. Ve'yetzu shloshtam. Look at the English. It says, and the three of them went. And then what does it say? Ve'yered Hashem b'amud anan. And God descended in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance to the tent. He summons Aaron and Miriam. The two of them went out. So what's going on? So first God appears suddenly to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. He says, the three of you, please come out of the tent of meeting. They come out. God comes down in a pillar of cloud. That's the way God appeared physically, if you will. God doesn't have a physical appearance. But he descended in the pillar of a cloud, and he stood at the entrance of the tent, and he summons Miriam and Aaron. And he said, and what does God say? He puts Moshe aside, and what does he tell Aaron and Miriam? Shimon Advarai says, listen to what I have to say. If there shall be prophets among you, in a vision shall I, Hashem, make myself known to him. In a dream shall I speak with him. Not so is my servant Moses. Turn the page. In my entire house he is the trusted one. Mouth to mouth do I speak to him in a clear vision and not in riddles. At the image of Hashem does he gaze. Why did you not fear to speak against my servant Moses? What does God say?
I really like Moses.
I really like Moshe. What does he say? Because they had just said, didn't we all speak to God? And what does Hashem say? What does Hashem say? What's his answer? You all heard, but how does God speak to most people?
Through visions.
Through a vision and through a what? A riddle and a dream. But not so with Moses. In my entire house, he is the trusted one. Mouth to mouth do I speak to him. A clear vision, not in riddles. Why did you not fear to speak against my servant Moses? The wrath of Hashem flared up against them and he left. The cloud departed from atop the tent, and behold, Miriam was afflicted with tsaras, leprosy, like snow. Aaron turned to Miriam, behold, she was afflicted with tsaras. Aaron said to Moses, I beg you, my Lord, do not cast a sin upon us, for we have been foolish and we have sinned. Let her not be like a corpse, like one who leaves his mother's womb, and half flesh have been consumed. Moshe cries out to God, please God, heal her, now. Hashem says to Moses, were her father to spit in her face, would she not be humiliated for 7 days? Let her be quarantined outside the camp for 7 days, then she may be brought in. Miriam was quarantined for 7 days. The people did not journey until Miriam was brought in. Then the people journeyed from Chatzerot, and they encamped in the wilderness of Paran. What is going on with this wacky story? So I'm going to give you a little interpretation, unless anybody wants to share anything. Any little ideas. Suddenly God appears, Moses is humble, she gets stricken with leprosy, she has to go out of the camp, and then we were all at Sinai. Yeah, you were all there, but I speak to Moshe differently. What does it have to do with the Isha Kushit, with Moshe's wife? Now, you can't really answer this question without a little midrashic tradition. The Torah doesn't give us all the information. The Medrash tells us something very, very important. What did every Jewish couple do before the Torah was given at Sinai? What did every Jewish couple do before the Torah was given at Sinai? It says it explicitly in the Torah. They were all told to separate for 3 days. No husband and wife were supposed to have sexual relations, any physical contact for 3 days before the giving of the Torah. They were supposed to spiritually cleanse themselves. and not have any kind of physical, a little pure, super pure kind of, they go get the Torah, and what happens afterwards? All husbands and wives reunite, except for one Jewish couple. This is the information you need from the Medrash. Moshe and Tzipora, his wife. They didn't get back together. Moshe remained separate from Tzipora, essentially for the rest of his life after the giving of the Torah. This is not a model for the entire people. But it was something that Miriam and Aaron didn't understand, and they felt bad for their sister-in-law. And they said, therefore, and this is how it starts making sense, I don't understand, why are you not getting back together? Harak ach b'Moshe diber, are you the only one who spoke to God? We all spoke to God. We separated, and then we got back together. We go back to regular, normal life. And God chimes in and says, Moshe's different. Moshe doesn't go right back to normal life. Because Moshe has to be prepared at any moment to receive prophecy. Because I don't speak to Moshe like I speak to you. In riddles. In a dream state. Every other prophet, including Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah, when they would get a vision from God, they were in some kind of unconscious state of being. And that's why the great Maimonides, the Rambam, wrote, he used a Greek word called aspaklaria meira, that Moses was able to see God, so to speak. There's nothing to see. But he was able to speak to God through a clear glass, whereas everyone else had a little more haziness. And I don't quite understand this exactly, what happened to Moshe. We never deify a human being, even Moshe. He was a person, he made mistakes. But something happened to Moshe on Har Sinai. And he became super spiritualized, and he stayed in that state of being for the rest of his life. And necessary for that to happen, he needed to remain apart from Tzipora. This is not a model for the Jewish people or for humanity, because we're supposed to live in the world and be spiritual. But Moshe's level of spirituality was such that it changed. And Miriam and Aaron didn't get this. And they began to, I don't want to say bad mouth, but not perhaps give them the benefit of the doubt. We all stood at Sinai. We were all there. So what's going on? And that's why it says that God appeared to them suddenly, so that they could understand that that's the way God appeared to Moshe. They didn't have to, no preparation. That's it. Just like you and I are speaking to each other, that's the way God and Moshe spoke. Now, what was so awful about this then? Why does Miriam get stricken with leprosy for doing what she did? Was it so bad? She felt bad for her sister-in-law. So she called Moshe out on it.
What did she say to him?
What's that?
Who was she speaking?
She was speaking to Aaron. Moshe, Miriam and Aaron were speaking about Moshe and the fact that she was not he was not together with his wife anymore. What's that? So she might be held to a much higher level. I think that's a good explanation. That might be so. Everybody is judged according to their spiritual level. That's true. But I think there's something else, and this is Rabbi Soloveitchik's idea, and it's brilliant. And it really goes to the heart of why we care so much the way we speak about other people. What are we really doing by speaking ill of others? You think about it. You're making yourself feel better. Because, that's the net effect. Well, what is it that's so attractive about speaking ill of others?
Comparing your life to somebody else.
Because, right, when you're a little insecure, and we're all a little insecure, we all have times when we doubt ourselves. It's a lot simpler to make yourself feel better by questioning the special and unique nature of someone else. Because everybody is, and this is going to sound so trite, but it's really true, everybody is special, and everybody is unique. And when you start questioning their unique and special nature, and what was truly unique and special about Moshe, what was the most unique and special thing about Moses? His prophecy. No one had prophecy like Moshe. And when you start saying, your special nature is no different than me, we're the same. You take away that one. I remember when I was a kid, like, there were two things that mattered to me in elementary school and high school, because I was a regular, whatever. Two things. Basketball and drums. You could say anything bad about me, but if you criticize my basketball, I took it very personally because I care deeply about being on that team and doing well on that team, and I consider myself a really good drummer even at a young age. And if you, but so there were a lot of things that people could say, like, it would bounce right off of me. But those two things I was particularly sensitive to. For some reason, my ego, and you know, during those adolescent years, when you're developing your sense of self, you really need to hold on to something. What is special about me? Who am I? How am I different from anyone else? And when I'm not as good, when I don't get as good grades or this, or I didn't get it out, but I got the drum thing going for me. I got the basketball thing. I got whatever it is. Everybody's got their thing. Moshe's thing was nevuah, it was prophecy. And when Miriam and Aaron said, it's no different than us, we all got prophecy. We all stood at Sinai, we all heard the Torah. That's what's unique about being Jewish. We don't just say there were only a few prophets, like Muhammad or Jesus. We say that every Jew was elevated to the level of a prophet, but no one like Moshe. And God gets involved in this conversation. And he says that you are taking something, figuratively, God didn't say this, but figuratively, you are taking something which is unique and special about my servant Moshe, and you're saying he's no different than anyone else. And that you can never do. Because you strip another person of their sense of worth and of self. And that's why it's so enticing. Because it's a cheap, quick way to feel better about yourself. There are essentially two ways in life, I think, to feel good about yourself. One is, you do great things. And you pat yourself on the back because you pulled off something awesome. And you feel good. Is a much simpler way. And that is by pulling down someone else, you don't feel as bad. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with feeling, it's just who we are. Remember when you got like a bad grade and the teacher was giving out the tests and you were like praying that the kid next to you gets at least as bad or not so much better than you? So why does it make me feel any better? I got a 76 and he got a 75. Oh, I can go on living now. But why? I still got a 76. It's not a good grade. How did that help me? Now, I'm just telling you, it did. And it does for most people. And that's okay. It's just the way we're hardwired on some level. But what does that say about us? And this is the only way I can explain a very weird statement that's mentioned in the Talmud. I never understood this. It says someone who speaks Lashon Hara has always worshipped idols. Huh? Speaking Lashon Hara is bad, but like worshipping idols, what does it have to do with worshipping a graven image? Because if you're speaking Lashon Hara and it's doing something for you, it's demonstrating that you are not gauging your life in relation to your own potential, but you're just simply comparing yourself to someone else. If we can feel so good about ourselves based on the way other people are, and by the way, I'm including myself, we're all like this on some level. But the ideal in Judaism, and that's what it means to believe in God, is that you realize that the only thing that matters is you and your maker, and how far you get to fulfilling and reaching your potential that God gave you. What everyone else is doing around you doesn't really matter. It has nothing to do with your own growth. Of course, it matters the way you treat other people, but I'm trying to take this a step deeper. I'm trying to say, let's go to the root of why it makes us feel so good when we say something negative. And that's because we are ultimately feeling better about ourselves when we level the playing field. The playing field shouldn't be level. It's okay for that person to be great at that. I got my thing, he's got his thing. And that's the way. But once we take that down, we take that away from another person. And that's why it says Moshe was Anav Mikol Adam. He was the humblest. He didn't say anything. He kept quiet. Moshe was the most secure person. When you say a person is humble and modest, that's another way of saying they're really good with themselves. Because when you're really good with yourself, you don't need to strut your stuff. You don't need to tell everybody and show everyone how great you are, how accomplished you are, because you're good with you. And that is a very high level. And I also believe that it goes in connection with his relationship with God. Someone who communicated on that high of a spiritual level understood, and it also explains his humility. My favorite picture of Albert Einstein, who I love and read a lot of books about, is the goofy picture where he's got his tongue out and his hair is like this. Why? Because when you're that brilliant and you don't have to take yourself so seriously because you're really just in it for the truth, for the knowledge, for the wisdom. And it's not important what other people say. It's a very, very hard level, and it's essentially the way, because if you truly understand who you are in relation to God and how insignificant and how little and nothing we are, that's what ultimately produces humility. Not that, like, you're not worth anything, but that you're not really, you know, and that's what Torah study, we talked a lot about Torah study last night. Torah study is supposed to humble us. Supposed to make us feel like we don't need to be big shots. We just need to be fulfilling our potential. And lastly, what's the deal with this tzaras? Miriam gets this leprosy. And how do you deal with the leprosy? It's very interesting. She gets quarantined. She's out of the camp. The rabbis teach it's midah keneged midah. It's measure for measure. Because what do you do, essentially, when you speak ill of somebody else? Yeah, you're infecting community, and you're basically isolating and alienating them. It makes another person feel all alone. So what's the remedy? You got to spend some time alone and figure this thing out. And what's so interesting is 7 days. The entire camp waited before continuing to go in the wilderness for Miriam. And that was also Midah Keneged Midah. Does anybody remember when Miriam waited, and who did she wait for? It's a very beautiful story. Miriam was the one that watched a little baby Moshe when he was floating along in the Nile. When his mother, Yocheved, did not know what to do because they were going house to house searches for Jewish baby boys. And they put him in this little basket and let him float down the Nile. And thank God, Pharaoh's daughter, who was a righteous woman, took him in. But who watched him that whole time? It was Miriam. It was his older sister. And as a way of rewarding her for the compassion and love she showed her younger brother, the entire Jewish people waited those 7 days that she was quarantined before moving the camp to the next place in the wilderness. It's a very, very powerful story about what's really, I think, happening. And I think why we're so drawn to this. I think if we're just honest with ourselves, I don't think anyone, you know, doesn't have that need on some level to say something that's going to ultimately, at someone else's expense, make ourselves feel better. We don't do things because we're mean to other people. There are very few people who are just that mean. Most people are just looking out to feel good about themselves. But in doing so, it brings down another person, and it takes that which is unique and special, and it says to them, you're not so special. You're not so unique. You're just like everybody else. And that really is, that's very painful. And that's something we have to learn to be sensitive to. I don't have great advice about our world, because the culture of our society is so wrapped up in speaking ill of each other. I feel like that this is one of those areas in Jewish tradition from the Torah which stands in very stark contrast to the world in which we live. And I don't have great advice other than to say, just do the best you can, and not to walk out of here going, well, I can't say anything then. You know, and to try to be a little more sensitive. Some people do this. Practical example, they'll say for 1 hour during the day, I will not speak Lashon Hara. From like 3:30 to 4:30 in the morning, just kidding. From like 1 hour in the day, I'm going to like pick 1 hour during the course of the day. I know that sounds, what, for 1 hour? Yeah, it's not so simple. My rabbi, my 7th and 8th grade Rebbe, who was a very beloved rabbinic figure in my life, Rabbi Yaakov Pasternak. If you've been to my home, I have a picture of him on my in my dining room. And I used to call him before Yom Kippur for many years to wish him an easy fast, a good year. And sometimes when I call really close to Yom Kippur, his wife would get on the phone and say, he can't speak. He's doing a Tanit Dibur. What's a Tanit Dibur? Tanit is a fast. Dibur is of speech. Has anyone done that? For 24 hours in Yom Kippur, he didn't speak. He wanted to make sure that one day of the year wouldn't say anything negative about somebody else. And by the way, it's hard. Even on Yom Kippur, it's really, really hard to be mindful. But the more you speak about it, the more you learn about it, the more it becomes part of our thinking. And like most therapy, awareness is halfway, gets you halfway there. Just being aware of this, even if we can't fully get, because it's hard. It's very, very difficult. Okay, I babbled on long enough. Please.
By definition, are these three things only if you're talking about a person to someone else? If you're talking to the person themselves?
Oh. No, I think it's perfectly okay if you're saying it. You have to sometimes say these things to other people if you want to rectify problems. If you want to, I mean, let's say somebody offended you. You're supposed to. The Torah tells us that hochech tochiach atamitecha, you shall reprove your neighbor. By the way, that mitzvah, not everybody likes this, not so politically correct, but that's the mitzvah from where we have the mitzvah of outreach. If we see a fellow Jew who is sinning, we're supposed to try as best as we can in a positive way. And by the way, if you don't think it will be received favorably, you're not supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you think it could be received favorably, then say, you know, today is Shabbat. On Shabbat, we're supposed to try to do that. That phrase, hochech tochiach atamitecha, that you shall surely rebuke your neighbor, that's the same phrase that the rabbis learn, that if someone offends you, or somebody hurts you in some kind of way, you're supposed to say something and not bottle it up. The next phrase in the Torah, in the very same verse, says, "V'lo tisa lav chet," so that you don't bear sin because of him. What sin? The first phrase in that verse says, "Lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha," do not harbor hate for your fellow Jew. There's three phrases in one verse. Don't harbor hate, rebuke thy neighbor, and don't bear sin because of him. And all the rabbis ask, don't harbor hate, say something, and what's the last part? Don't bear sin. What sin?
That you might act out because of the anger that you made.
The sin is anger. But by keeping it bottled up, by not saying anything, by not fulfilling the middle phrase of hochech tochiach, of saying something, you're going to end up coming to hate the person. The ultimate goal is really to share it. So you're asking, should you say something negative? You have to be able to say, listen, and by the way, this is an art. It's not a science. To be able to actually share something with a friend when you've been offended, when you've been hurt, to actually figure out strategically a smart and sensible way to share the pain that you're feeling so that he or she can be given an opportunity to apologize and not to repeat it. So you, in order to do that, you have to sometimes say these things. But it is a mitzvah to do that. If your friend is just going to, it's just going to blow them off, it's just going to make things worse, then there's no such mitzvah. Just like there's no mitzvah to try to tell a fellow Jew to start keeping a mitzvah that you don't think they're going to keep anyway, they're just going to think you're trying to be judgmental and holier than thou. But if you think they're going to listen, if you think that you say it in the right way, privately, you never involve anyone else. It's always private. Yeah.
You pick and choose.
What do you mean?
So many things that you can say about somebody else. You know?
Now, this is when you've been offended. Someone upsets you. Somebody hurts you. Someone does something against you. What's the attitude as far as Judaism is concerned? The attitude is really not to just bottle it up and just walk away. You're supposed to give them the opportunity to apologize. I've been involved in a lot of situations where the offender is not even aware that they said or did anything wrong. They might be so oblivious and insensitive, or the other person might have a particular sensitivity that the other was unaware of. That often happens. Now, where it doesn't happen, and the person knows they did something wrong, you're still ideally supposed to try to say something. Because if you don't, you're going to walk around with a lot of negative energy. Yeah.
So one of the things that came up for me when I started learning about Lashon Hara, something I still haven't really figured out is, in a work environment, where you're supervising someone, and if my supervisor says, how is so and so doing with X, Y, or Z?
Right.
Could be positive, could be negative.
Right.
Combination.
Keep it focused on the work product. Mm-hmm. Just keep it out of not personal. It's no different than when two politicians are debating a policy issue in a campaign, and this is one of the problems with what's happening in the political process. People don't even know where the politicians stand on the issues because it got so personal and everyone's just ranking each other out. I want to know what your issue. So this, I would say the same thing. If you're someone else's boss and you're being asked to evaluate someone or give your opinion, your professional opinion, Just be objective. And you have to tell the truth. You have to speak the truth. People call also. What happens if you get a call for a reference? You're supposed to lie and tell them they were great when they were awful? No. But I wouldn't use the word awful. I would say, here were the strengths and here were the weaknesses. And be straightforward and truthful. And try to depersonalize things. The Talmud is debates, arguments, right? The whole Talmud is arguing. But they never get personal. They never get personal. You know why they say the house of Shammai and the house of Hillel? Because Hillel and Shammai always argued all the time. They never agreed on anything. But how come it says Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue? Because the house means the academy. Shammai and Hillel were friends. They were rabbinic colleagues. They loved each other. But they vehemently disagreed with each other on issues. So I would kind of apply that to answering questions in the workplace, where you need to be truthful, or else, first of all, you can't tell a lie. Dvar sheker tirchak, the Torah says, from a falsehood you shall distance yourself. And you'll never be taken seriously by anyone if you can't be, you know, but you, the idea is to try to depersonalize it. That's hard, you know. Yeah.
What about, I guess, reality TV is an addiction of mine. So, like, watching the Kardashians and not saying anything mean about them, but it's probably a bunch of lies. Or, similarly, like, if you're out with your friends and they're all, you know, speaking bad about someone, but you're not engaging in it.
Right.
But you're not, like, stopping it. Are you supposed to stop it? Are you supposed to walk away?
I don't know if I told you this story. I was talking to two other guys, like, a year ago. And one person just started speaking about somebody else. And then the third guy was like, this sounds like Lashon Hara. I'm out of here. And then he runs away. And I'm standing there like a moron. I'm like, all right, I guess you can keep telling me. You know, like, and so you don't want to embarrass the other. You don't want to embarrass. Like, I'm always thinking, like, if I call this guy out, hey, that's Lashon Hara. You know, I'm telling you, when I was a counselor in a camp many years ago, and I was 19 years old, I was a camp counselor. And I remember I had all the rabbi's kids. And the rabbi's kids are the worst. I'm just telling you. They were a little crazy. Except there were these two kids. Their father was like this sage and pious and super sensitive. And the kids were like these little rosy faces. They were like, and I remember I was out in a rowboat, you know, and they were literally 6 and 7 year olds. It was very cute. I had like 15 of them in a rowboat. And the kids were like, you know, and one kid said something nasty, and the other one was like, I think that's Lashon Hara. You know, like, I'm like, is that Lashon Hara? I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much Lashon Hara. You know, it's like, we're on the middle of the lake, I remember. And it was just so simple. It was beautiful. So what do you do? Was that what you were asking?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah,
like,
so...
do you stop it, or are you...
So first of all, you're not allowed to be party to it. You're not supposed to be party to it. So if you can just like... oh, you know, someone's, you know, kind of thing. Like, oh, you know, my phone just went off. I got to be somewhere else. If you can do that, that's great. A higher level would be to somehow put an end to it.
Right.
If you can do that without embarrassing the people, you know, because it's not license for embarrassment. It's not like, because you're speaking Lashon Hara, I can now make you feel like a jerk in front of these other people.
Right. But if you're watching it on TV, aren't you kind of supporting it?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, you know, like, don't ask me questions you don't want to hear the answer to, because it's like, it's so pervasive. It's like, yeah, I mean, of course.
Even on the news.
They say,
you can't even watch.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, the news went bad, man. The news, when did the news go from just telling us all the bad things that happened in the world to, like, really getting personal? You know,
when they had a cell.
What was
that? When they had a compete in the way of telling things.
Advertising. Like, today in the paper, it was the 10-year anniversary of Elliot Spitzer. Who cares about that? Like, why is that in the paper?
Because it sells.
Yeah, and also everybody in finance is very happy when it happens.
But you know what? But you want to know something, though? No. It's wrong to Elliot Spitzer. Just because somebody makes a mistake or does a sin doesn't mean you constantly rub it in their face for the rest of their lives. There's no basis for that. We believe in this thing called tshuva, which means that people... mess up, and they can. The whole Torah is filled with people making mistakes, but we give people a chance to rectify, and we are so unforgiving in our society. Somebody does something wrong, and it's public. We just schmutz them around the rest of their lives.
About that. Remember that redemptive. I mean, he didn't do a great thing, but he killed that lion, and then he basically had to go into hiding because people were, I mean, they destroyed his business through Yelp reviews. People were going out with him, and he had to go into hiding because and he did a terrible thing. It was not a good thing that he did. But I think the internet allows for.
It's so weird. We live in such a liberal, we live in such a liberal, open society, but we're so. I don't know what it is. Is it because we're really not so judgmental, but the advertisers just want to sell, and we just get sucked into it, and they cater to the lowest common denominator? They just get us where, we had a long, hard day, and I want something juicy. I want to just forget my stupid little problems and hear about someone else's foils. And they're rich and famous, so what does it matter to them? It's such a bad way to relax. It's such a bad way to develop ourselves. We're better than that. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It'd be better not to watch the show. It would, obviously. It's not a healthy program. Yes, please.
Yeah. What about, you said that you shouldn't bottle things in, and if someone offends you, you have to tell that person.
Unless it's going to cause create a mountain out of molehill. You know what I mean? Correct.
What about, if you feel you're offended, you've been wronged, you're hurt, you want to talk to a friend about that? Or a therapist?
Therapist is different. Therapist is different. If in order for you to deal with the internal stuff that you're going through, therapist, I think, is an exception to the rule in Lashon Hara. It would be better. Then you're getting into a little more of a gray area. Then it's better. Then you can certainly share it with a friend, as long as you keep it anonymous in a smart way, in a way that they're not going to figure it out, because they know you're all of your three friends in the whole world. I didn't mean that. What about you?
No, but like
I have four.
I think going off of that idea, for example, let's say you had a bad day at work, and my friends don't know who my, colleagues are, but if I'm paint the picture of the situation. Still, abiding by HIPAA, so to speak. They don't know who they are. They would never be able to find out who they are, but, I want to talk about it.
Right, well, you need to figure out a way of getting it off your chest. Therapy is the best thing. It's expensive, though, every time you get upset with a friend, okay? If you can talk to someone else that you really, in a way that it doesn't disclose who it is, so you can get advice to learn how to deal with it, so that it doesn't fester. As I said, the best thing is to go to that person who offended you and be in a it's not going to work in many cases, but it will work in others. And if I can encourage people to be a little more, not confrontational, but a little more transparent. And here's one little quick trick, and we have to give it over to Rabbi Jonathan in a minute. And that is, this is the way what you did made me feel. I studied this in couples therapy. We all went to that couples therapy, all the rabbis. Remember years ago? What was his name? And he taught us. He said, this is really good for couples also. You come home, you see the stuff lying on the floor, and you can say, how many times have I asked you not to leave the stuff on the floor? Or, when I see something on the floor, it makes me feel. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that change, because you can't argue with a person's feelings. It's the way I feel. And you're not saying you did something wrong, you're a terrible person. This is the way it makes me feel. You go to your friend, I heard you said something not so nice about me. Really is making me feel so uncomfortable. I'm feeling really uneasy about this. I. That's a good time to use the word I. It's a little helpful trick. It is not easy stuff. And there's no black and whites for this. Ask a question when you're in the throes of one of these situations. Get an objective third party who you can figure out. And this is a whole area of Jewish tradition. Rabbi Daniel Feldman, you can Google his name. He's a great Torah scholar at Yeshiva University. He's written 8 books on these types of things. Lashon Hara in the marketplace, in the workplace. It's great stuff. If anybody wants to see. Oh, another great book. Anyone here? Words That Hurt, Words That Heal. Rabbi Joseph Taluskin. Great, great book. And he has real life examples, and the basic halachot are in there as well, about appropriate speech. So, great. No one knows what to say now. You don't want to offend me, So we're just going to end class. Have a great night, everyone. Take a little break. This Shabbat is going to be amazing. You know why? Because it's Shabbos. We're here, and we're starting the third book of the 5 books of Moses, the book of Leviticus, Sefer Vayikra. It's going to be amazing. and come around. And thank you all again for all the help on the dinner. It was really, really amazing, everyone. Have a great